This is a Talking Pictures podcast presented by the Film and Photography Society at UCLA. Today, we'll be talking about the origins of romantic comedies and what many people refer to as the golden age of romantic comedies, with discussions of movies including When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle. But first, let's do a brief introduction of our host, and we're going to talk about our favorite Valentine's candy since it is February. So hi, my name's Brianna Rose Hewitt, and I think my favorite Valentine's candy is anything chocolate with a raspberry filling. And if Isabel, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. I'm Isabel. I would say my favorite Valentine's Day candy is probably the Fun Dip. I've always loved that.
And Jet?
Hi, my name's Jet. I don't really like candy that much. When I do go for candy, it's usually Reese's peanut butter cups.
Good option. I just had a couple of those last night that were shaped in little hearts for Valentine's Day.
All right, so just to start with the origins of romantic comedy, in case some of you aren't familiar, just a dictionary definition, a movie or play that deals with love in a light, humorous way. And the origins can actually be dated all the way back to William Shakespeare, who is often credited with the basic setup of the whole two people meet and then have a conflict in their way and then reunite to live happily ever after. Popular romantic comedies include Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, 10 Things I Hate About You. The list goes on, honestly. In recent years, the genre has actually decreased, probably within the last decades, with the addition of streamers such as Netflix, just since the platform creates a lot of modern rom-coms. And we see less big screen rom-coms, with the occasional exception every few years, you know, such as Crazy Rich Asians, which came out in 2018. A lot of people fault this with the standard actors that used to be in rom-coms, such as Hugh Grant, Matthew McConaughey. Whenever they left the genre to explore their own creative taste, there was kind of a struggle to launch new rom-com stars and filmmakers. But we do see some promising new leads such as Henry Golding, Dev Patel, Riz Ahmed, Steven Yeun, Manny Jacinto.
But for this podcast specifically, we're going to look at what is the classic age or the golden age of rom-coms. And this is the rom-coms that were produced from the late 1980s to the early 1990s. They created movies such as You've Got Mail, While You Were Sleeping, 13 Going on 30, and of course the rom-coms that we're going to be talking about today. We saw a lot of iconic stars there, such as Julia Roberts and Meg Ryan. Meg Ryan is in both movies that we are analyzing today, as well as the male stars mentioned above. They were the standard stars in this age. And there were certain niches to these romantic comedies, such as catchphrases and memorable lines. For example, in the movie Pretty Woman, there's this line where she goes, big mistake, and people always reference it. It's even resurfaced on TikTok recently. There's always a slow build of chemistry, which we see in plot lines, such as You've Got Mail, and a lot of meet cutes. So like for the Harry Met Sally meet cute, this would be when they first meet each other, when they do that road trip in the beginning of the movie. And we no longer see these because the different stars of this genre started exploring different tropes. And also production companies figured that audiences, especially the female ones, were getting tired of these formulas. And so they started focusing on more imperfect relationships, sex, and things they felt reflected more modern times, which we'll get into more next episode because this is a two-parter. And so we no longer see so much of that over-romanticized family in that the films that we'll be analyzing today. So going into our first film, which is When Harry Met Sally, it's a rom-com that came out in 1989, directed by Rob Reiner, starring Meg Ryan, who plays Sally Albright, and Billy Crystal, who plays Harry Burns. The two originally met after driving from Chicago to New York after both graduating from the University of Chicago. The road trip is filled with lots of banter, and they eventually part ways at the end because Harry says this iconic line of the movie that men and women cannot be friends without sleeping with each other. And they meet again briefly 5 years later into the future at an airport where Sally is first starting a relationship with a man named Joe, I believe, and Harry is about to get married to a woman named Helen. And then we fast forward to another 5-6 years. Sally has recently broken up with Joe, and Harry is getting a divorce from Helen. And when the two meet again, both at this kind of low point in their lives, they confide in one another. They begin a friendship that the viewers can see as first platonic, but definitely gradually builds in sexual attention until the end where they eventually fall in love. And to this day, it is one of the most popular romantic comedies, often seen as the standard. And as someone who loves rom-coms, this past weekend was actually my first time watching it. And overall, I can see how it was super cute. I thought it was super cute. I see how it fits that rom-com formula because there truly is that slow burn as they do start out as friends. And then there are those romanticized chance encounters that I don't want to say are impossible in real life, but are definitely rare and more of an art of movies. And I especially love the ending scene, the New Year's party, where Harry says all the things he loves about Sally, like her ordering habits, his love talking to her before he goes to bed, and when he wakes up. As someone who loves all those cheesy lines, I just found myself smiling, was so happy to see that ending. And I also recognized that it's impossible for men and women to be friends because the man always wants to have sex lines, showing that the impact of the movie is pretty large for people who still haven't seen it. And I don't agree with Harry in this opinion, and I think one of my main critiques of the movie is that the line is pretty much never proven wrong because Harry and Sally do have a friendship where they aren't having sex, but eventually they do have sex and they fall in love and get married, which is adorable for the storyline, but I don't like that and imply that the quote is correct because I think everyone here, we all have platonic relationships with people of different genders. So, you know, Harry was a little old-fashioned for that mindset. And my only other major critique, and maybe it's because this is kind of like my specialty of study, is representation, so I'm sensitive to this topic in school, but all the main characters are white, and when they show older couples throughout the movie sharing their romance stories in these confessionals, which I actually thought was a really unique and nice touch to the movie, all were white except one Asian couple, and I believe one couple might have been Jewish, but it wasn't outright stated. And however, in this classical era of rom-coms, we don't see a lot of representation, so I think the movie was just kind of mirroring the production values of the time, which isn't right, and I think it's something we can definitely dive more into next episode. But Jet and Isabel, I am definitely dying to hear your opinions. So Isabel, let's go ahead and start with you.
Yeah, of course. So first off, I actually very much agree with Brianna on the point about the famous argument they have near the beginning of the movie about whether men and women can actually be friends. I think the movie and a lot of other rom-coms, especially back then, they never really show like healthy friendships that didn't turn into something else because that wasn't, you know, the point of rom-coms. Obviously, there was supposed to be a romance that developed. But I think that that kind of ended up perpetuating the idea that men can't be friends with women and allows for the kind of like culture we still see today of like men can't control their actions type of thing. So I definitely recognize that as like something. I mean, I love the movie, but as I was watching, I was just like, oh, like, there's one thing that I disagree with. Another point I want to make about how romantic events in rom-com shape expectations for real-world relationships is that the interdynamics of relationships in these movies, of the man being calm and in control while the woman is kind of like complaining or getting angry with the guy or showing more emotions. I kind of do notice this in a lot of the older rom-coms, and I feel like it allows for just like some sexist expectations and assumptions about what a male-female relationship should be about. Like, for instance, Harry's always very calm, meanwhile like Sally's getting upset over something he says. And I feel like what that looks like in societal expectations is it encourages like, I feel like, a teasing, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but what's not great is it also encourages kind of like dismissal of like women's opinions or frustrations that they're trying to address rather than encouraging good communication. I say these things not to say you can't enjoy a good Meg Ryan rom-com, obviously, because almost all the ones that were listed in the beginning were Meg Ryan. She was just the star of the 90s, but rather it's important to watch these movies with a grain of salt and remember the time they came from because, you know, different things were acceptable or kind of overlooked back then. And it's kind of hard because it's like, it's so well done. You know, even the scenes I want to be a little bit upset about, they're just like so funny. And I really just ended up enjoying when Harry meets Sally. It was my first time seeing it as well. So moving over to Jet.
Yeah. So I'm a person who's never really seen rom-coms. Of course, I've seen a couple, but there's nothing really about them that I've really remembered. None of them have really stuck out to me. So this is like my first time like actually watching a rom-com and paying attention during it, I guess. But yeah, I really like this movie a lot more than I expected it to. I didn't expect it to be funny, but there's actually parts of it that I was actually laughing at. And I really like the development of their relationship throughout the film. That's something that, well, I'll get into on the next movie, but that's something that I felt like this movie did really well, was showing the progression of their relationship. I do agree with what both of you said on Harry's like main quote through the movie, saying that like men and women can't be friends without having a sexual relationship, which, yeah, like I know now we all kind of see it differently, but I also want to know how that line was perceived when it was initially released, just because like times change and people have different opinions. But that was like a big line that stood out to me, that like that gave me a big yikes about Harry. I thought Harry was like, I don't know, I didn't like his character at first. He came off as a jerk towards Sally, kind of within like the first couple minutes of the scene. We see like Harry making out with his girlfriend at the time, and then he gets in the car, and not too long into like the car ride with Sally, he starts like trying to hit on her, which is another red flag for Harry. But I do see like how Harry grew and developed over the course of the movie. But I think that, again, had a lot to do with having Sally in his life. And then I think he also had the like more character growth than Sally, which I thought was interesting. I didn't think Sally was like too annoying. I know that's like a trope with rom-coms or like the romantic genre, to have like the over-dramatic female lead or like female lead that over-romanticizes a lot of aspects of their life. I didn't have that problem with Sally. I thought she's kind of being the more rational one in this relationship compared to Harry. And I think the thing that really made me start to like appreciate the movie was when they started to become friends, which was about halfway through. I think it was like, there's a quick scene of them like carrying a Christmas tree together, or there was the scene of them at the New Year's party and they were just like dancing together, and like you could see like on their faces that they were both enjoying the moment, but they didn't really know how to feel because up to this point they were just friends. But all in all, I really liked the movie. I thought Harry had like a good like change in his character, although his quote of like men and women can't really be friends was never like disproven. And I thought this one was probably my favorite out of the two that I watched this weekend.
Awesome. I think it was definitely one of my favorites too. And while I could talk about Harry Met Sally for much longer, for the sake of time, I think we're going to go ahead and move to Sleepless in Seattle. So Isabel, if you want to go ahead and take away that with the introduction.
Yeah. All right. So Sleepless in Seattle, which also stars Meg Ryan, but this time her co-stars Tom Hanks. It came out almost 4 years after When Harry Met Sally, and was directed by Nora Ephron. So the storyline follows Annie Reid, who's recently engaged to a man named Walter, who's very quirky, but he's a good guy. And very early on into the engagement, she starts questioning if they were meant to be, because she doesn't feel this magic that everyone talks about when they meet the one, you know. Meanwhile, Sam Baldwin, Tom Hanks' character, is a widower, and about 1.5 years after her passing, his son Jonah calls into a radio station saying his Christmas wish is for his dad to have a new wife. Long story short, Sam eventually gets on the line and talks about his troubles, and Annie hears the entire thing and is automatically drawn to this man, even travels to Seattle in search for him, and they end up meeting together in the end. So, Brianna, do you want to start us off with thoughts?
Sure. So, Sleepless in Seattle is actually one of my mom's favorite rom-coms. I think it's runner-up to You've Got Mail. And this is the second time I've watched it. I haven't watched it in almost 5-7 years, so I didn't really remember it. And I thought it was really cute. I think the storyline definitely embodies that fantasized heavy romance story that we talked about in the very beginning. And especially when there's like the talk of like magic and signs, such as Meg Ryan's character wedding dress try on, it rips in the very beginning and she thinks it's a sign the relationship is doomed. Or when when Sam locks eyes with Annie at the airport, and it's almost kind of like this love at first sight. And so it's very, very romanticized, which I think is half the appeal of rom-coms, contrary to what a lot of people say, which eventually led to kind of like the downfall of this era. I don't think rom-coms have to be real because we watch movies to kind of escape and have this fantasy. I will say, while I loved the movie, I don't think it definitely has the best ethics, because Annie, in a way, is emotionally cheating on her fiancé as she's kind of trying to explore this man and her curiosities of him. I especially think when she literally goes to his house in Seattle and ends up following him and his son around to kind of get an idea of him. It's definitely giving stalker vibes, but in the most romantic way possible. And I appreciate it because I think we've all probably done something a little crazy for a crush, and now we internet stalk. They didn't have the internet back then. So, you know, people may fight me on it, but I don't condone what Annie did. But at the same time, I'm not going to go on a rant about the morality of her actions because I think it really makes the plot funny. And at the same time, there's like a lot of rom-coms like The Proposal, where Sandra Bullock literally coerces her assistant into marrying her, where we kind of do raise our eyebrows. But at the same time, we're watching it because we want to escape. And when I watch rom-coms, I understand that they aren't very realistic. Why they may set my expectations high, and that's something I have to work on. I really just appreciate them for what they are, and there really isn't any harm to that. But I love Meg Ryan, and I call her the original crazy girl because she wanted a man and went after him. And maybe she started to back down in the end, but she never lost her feelings, and she eventually got him in the end. And for that, she's a queen. I love her. So, Isabel, if you want to give your opinions on what you thought.
Yeah, of course. I totally agree. And it's true what you said about how rom-coms are really best watched as an escape and a, you know, fantastical reality rather than something to base your own relationships off of. Because, I mean, if you're watching it from the latter perspective, there's plenty you could find wrong with Sleepless in Seattle. But at its core, it's simply just an extremely romantic movie. And I'm such a sucker for good on-screen chemistry. So especially when, you know, Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks meet in person, I just die every time. And I think if we're going to talk about the unrealistic and harmful expectations for real relationships and rom-coms, we should also address the positive that I was, you know, trying to think of as I was watching these movies. I really think that especially these old rom-coms from the 90s really fuel the desire for deeper relationships, if you know what I mean, just because the connections and the romance is just so intense and desirable. And I know when I would watch You've Got Mail or Sleepless in Seattle as a kid with my mom, just all I wanted to do is just, you know, go out and fall in love. I think it's, yeah, but it's also nice to see a time without screens or phones. Personally, before online dating even existed, it was just a nice, fresh reminder that, you know, you can feel connected and meet people in the world without doing so, you know, through social media. So yeah, again, there's good and bad. One more thing I kind of don't like about older rom-coms, going back on something Brianna said earlier about misrepresentation, is just the lack of diversity of different kinds of relationships as well. While it's not necessarily rom-com's, you know, fault specifically, because the romance shown at the times was a reflection of what was publicly acceptable at the time, I feel there's a deficit that's still felt today, just from like the lack of minorities and people in unconventional or non-monogamous relationships, just the lack of the examples in the media. And I know for me personally, just being gay, sometimes it was hard growing up feeling comfortable dating wise, just because I didn't really like know what relationships with women for me would look like. Like, not that we should be, you know, looking into movies for advice, but just simply seeing more like LGBTQ plus relationships growing up would probably have helped me feel a bit more secure. However, I love Sleepless in Seattle nonetheless, and I really do love how it shows the healing that love can bring and the fantastical element to love that really is real, and love is totally a magical thing. So, yep, that's the end of mine. Jet?
I don't have much to say about this just because it wasn't my favorite. I think I looked at it like differently than what you both said you looked at it. Like, I viewed it differently just because I was looking at like, oh, well, this movie isn't really realistic, which I guess isn't the point of the genre. So I think I kind of like that kind of hindered my viewing of the movie, but I didn't really like Meg Ryan's character in this movie. I kind of wasn't interested in her storyline at all. I was kind of more interested in Tom Hanks' character, Sam, and his relationship with his son after Sam's wife died. I felt like that was really interesting, especially because, like, there's, like, one scene in the movie where he's, like, dreaming of her, and, like, we see, like, a memory that he had of her. I thought that was just, like, a really, like, interesting aspect that I wish the movie relied more on. And I think another reason why I didn't really like this movie was just because we didn't get to see the development of Sam and Annie's relationship like we did in the other movie. I don't think we got to see their relationship develop, so I wasn't really intrigued in this movie the same way as I was in the other one. But yeah, I think my only big disappointment was just Meg Ryan. I didn't think there's much romance in the movie. It was just like, yeah, I wish there was more between the characters, other than like a radio call and the last maybe 5 minutes of the film.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. And I definitely think people either like love Sleepless in Seattle, or they find it like boring or like shallow or not that interesting. So it's interesting to see the different perspectives of it. And unfortunately, we can't go all into that due to time limit. But I'm really excited for next week when we're going to kind of contrast more modern rom-coms to what this golden age is. A lot of critical pieces say you don't make rom-coms like they used to. And I agree. I do really miss the fantasy and love at first sight plots, no matter how unrealistic they may be. And I really do not have to turn to books to get kind of that same fulfillment, since you don't really see them in movies anymore. And I feel like when you see those elements now, they're really in movies that are catered to teens, such as like the To All the Boys I Loved Before trilogy, which is a more modern rom-com, which is one of my comfort movies. But it's sad that we don't see more of that for even like more mature audiences. And I do appreciate the modern rom-com in certain aspects of it. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of what discussion we have in the following episode.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like a lot of movies nowadays will take place in, you know, high school or early college, which makes the material a lot different, a lot more focused on the inner dynamics of, you know, teenagers, that kind of drama. So yeah, sometimes it's nice to just sit back and watch like an old classic.
Yeah, and I'm excited for next week's episode where we get to watch a couple more rom-coms. I think How Harry Met Sally kind of like made me more excited for this project. And I think that was like a great movie just to like start off with, especially with this genre. So I'm excited to learn more.
I am glad you appreciated it, Jet. And hopefully by the end of all this, we can make you hopefully a more rom-com fan fanatic. And so thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we will see you next episode.
This episode was hosted by Brianna Rose Hewitt, Jet Nelson, and Isabel Olson. Produced by Phoebe Wang, Dylan Mahoney, and Megada Gordy. Edited by Phoebe Wang and Dylan Mahoney. Executive produced by Anuradha Srikanth. Thank you for listening.